you know, I think it does show sort of where the sheriff's where the sheriff's interests lie in terms of advocating for the people in his jail.
Is it true? We heard Carswell, the federal prison where Reality Winner is, they actually didn't lose electricity, but didn't want to turn on the heat so that it wouldn't be said that only prisoners get heat in Texas.
I haven't gotten any indication that that was true. You know, I've heard plenty of complaints about the conditions that I've talked to, you know, families and friends and lawyers of people who were in there. You know, the thing is, if you turn off the heat, the staff has an incentive not to turn off the heat because then they have to work in those conditions. What I have heard is that it took a while for the heat to, you know, be functional enough to make much difference, and that there were places in the facility where the conditions varied quite a lot. Like, some places in the facility had longer power outages than others. So I haven't gotten any confirmation about that.
Gary Blankenship, we want to thank you for being with us and for your reporting with the Marshall Project. We will link to your latest piece, Inside Frigid Texas Prisons, Broken Toilets, Disgusting Food, Few Blankets. And tune in tomorrow, Democracy Now!, as we remember the pioneering science fiction writer, Octavia Butler, who died 15 years ago this week. She gave one of her last interviews to Democracy Now! In 2005. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring for a development director. Our development director oversees KBOO's fundraising, donor and business outreach, and leads the development team with light supervisory duties. Our ideal candidate has at least 4 years of proven development experience in the nonprofit sector, preferably with significant foundation and major donor fundraising work. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit kboo.fm/employment. Apply by February 24th. KBOO is an affirmative action and equal opportunity employer.
Wednesday, March 3rd at 10 p.m., KBOO makes everything metal. It's the Metal March, a special benefit show for KBOO Community Radio, featuring 7.5 hours of brutality from your favorite KBOO metal programs. Heavy Metal Vomit Party, Oil for Kisses, The Metal Margin, and Pandemonium. March 4th and support metal on KBOO. Text METAL to 44321 or go to kboo.fm/metal to donate and tune in to the Metal March Marathon on KBOO. Again, that's Wednesday, March 3rd at 10 p.m. through Thursday, March 4th at 5:30 a.m. Metal takes over the airwaves for the Metal March Marathon. Only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01. It's Monday. It's time for some more talk radio with your host, Celeste Carey. Keep it locked right here on your community connection.
Good morning. Good morning. This is indeed your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metropolitan area. If you are in the Willamette River Valley and you're listening in Philomath, for example, you're listening at 104.3 FM. If you're in the Columbia River Gorge, places like Hood River, Oregon, White Salmon, Washington, that is 91.9. And of course, you know it, everywhere else, it's KBOO.FM. Welcome, everybody, to More Talk Radio. I'm flying solo today because my co-host and cohort in Conversation and Crime had his second COVID shot today and is not feeling, well, I'd say 100%. And there are a lot of people who are going through the inoculation at one phase or the other and have had various side effects and are doing their part in trying to both stop the transmission of the novel coronavirus, a.k.a. COVID-19, a.k.a., according to me, the singularity, and a.k.a., for the rest of people, a pain in some part. Yeah, okay, I was being circumspect, y'all, come on. Anyway, I applaud everybody who is going through that. I encourage those who are able to take the vaccine to do so we can try to reduce this, because we are inching up on a very sad mile marker here, and that is almost 500,000 deaths from COVID. And as you've noticed, in some places they are actually taking the time to stop and say some memorial, heartfelt memorial prayer words for so many people who have passed from disease. And likewise, I want to say something this weekend. A family member, an in-law, passed from the disease, and LaWanda Boone is my daughter's grandmother, and at 88 she contracted the disease and seemed to have beat it, only to just pass this Saturday. And so she's not the only person in my family or in my intimate circles or a friend that I know has passed. And so I can truly say there are very few people that haven't been touched by this. And I wanna just have a heartfelt moment for those who are dealing with the pain and the trauma and trials of COVID-19 and trying to figure out a new way past this reality changing and life changing event. So, you know, if people do have something that they want to say toward that, I am welcoming short statements about that. You know, it's not usually how we do more talk radio, but this is not usual times. And so I do want to let people know that I'm sensitive to that. And like I said, I do, you know, allow for us to have some kind of short observations or statements of how we are coping through that. We had planned to have an interview with the directors of our feature film that we're going to be hosting this coming Wednesday on the 24th. But it didn't happen. One of the members couldn't attend. And then with Cecil not also being able to attend, it kind of lacked the vitality we thought we would have. Nevertheless, I am still going to encourage everybody who is able to take advantage of the fact that KBOO is hosting a movie and a question and answer with a panel this week, both as kind of a celebration of Black images in media and art, and then also to be one of these community events that brings people together for fun and discussion, as well as a fundraiser, and that is BAM. The movie is the Black Artist Movement. It talks about the Black art movement in Chicago. And I do hope you will come visit our website at kboo.fm and check it out. Now, had we had the directors, we would have had about a 10-minute visit, and I would have talked to them, and then Cecil and I had planned to pivot and discuss the whole idea of Black images right now as far as cultural and social images of Black people, especially given the fact that with the summer past and I guess I'll say it, our movement was us too movement, maybe is a way to look at it, you know, and that our lives matter too. We wanted to look at how this whole awareness of how Black people are portrayed in media or discussed and portrayed as icons in terms of commercial transactions, or just how we are held up as human beings that have dignity and worth, and how those images have been examined in the past year or so, and the months, specifically the months past George Floyd's death. Now, if you are a little vague on what I'm talking about, let me narrow down right here, right now, by saying, how many of you recognize that Uncle Ben is no longer on the package? How many of you recognize that Aunt Jemima has not only changed her image some time ago, but you don't see her now? All of these caricatures and unflattering images of Black people are being rooted out, and hopefully not just Black people, but Indigenous people, you know, Asian people, Latinx people, everybody. These unflattering caricatures are being rooted out. But I had a conversation with a man, a Black man who I'm acquainted with, and he brought up something that I thought was very interesting, and we wanted to kind of tie this in with BAM. And it's the fact that we're concerned, he said, that with all of this social justice cleansing of these hurtful racist stereotypes, that maybe people of color, and especially Black people, might be totally rooted out from the collective consciousness and collective vision of society, because people don't want to put images of Black folks on the packages anymore because it might not be flattering. Now, I listened and I thought that there were some good points brought up, but I also countered with, well, oddly enough, it seems like almost every commercial I'm looking at nowadays, if it doesn't feature a Black person as if they're trying to rush and both get our money and mollify people and, you know, and pay homage to people, you know, on both ends of the spectrum, by having more of us out there. And I thought, well, maybe it might not be so. But he was adamant. He says, no, I'm afraid that what's going to happen is that in the fear of either being politically incorrect or just not wanting to bother with the possible controversy, we're not going to be seen and celebrated in images and cultural icons and such anymore. And so I thought, well, that was an interesting thought. And I thought, that's worthy of conversation. So I was wondering how people felt, because this is the last few days of Black History Month. And we are at a pivot point in how we do view Black Americans and all people of color, but specifically Black Americans, since we've been reluctant to get rid of those cultural icons, those images, those stereotypical images. And so I wanted to get some conversation. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And most specifically, the conversation I'm seeking is this. Will the images disappear? Will we become more sophisticated and realize that everybody here is a human being and have something respectful and uplifting and positive in terms of images we show of Black people and BIPOC in general, you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color? Or will we disappear? from view. So you can join in the conversation. And again, the phone number is 503-231-8187. I'm flying solo today. Cecil is healing, but I hope you're listening, Cecil. And give me a call and let me know. Also, don't forget, like I said, if you are feeling the pains of loss, or if you just want to say something, you know, positive in memoriam to all of us about how we can make it through and pass this very sad and unfortunate milestone we're about to hit, feel free, because I'm not untouched by COVID. I'm touched by it in a way that has me having lost longtime friends and having lost some family members and worrying about other family members being scarred by it. And, you know, this is one of those events in life that is going to leave us forever changed. We're not going to be the same as individuals or as a country or as the world because of COVID. And much like the way life changed for Americans in the United States when we had the 9/11 event, COVID is leaving its mark. It's leaving its mark. Give me a call. I'm going to make sure you get that number out, because when it's me talking by myself, you will get bored quickly. I'll add some Monday levity. So, you know, I got plenty of stuff that I can add to support or augment the conversation, but it's just me. Do you really just want to listen to me? Don't you want to talk? Let's have a conversation. Now, while we're waiting on folks to call, and my esteemed engineer, Sonia, is ready and at the telephone, I want to kind of talk a little bit about our plans for the events that I mentioned earlier, which sparked this whole idea.
Before we get too into that, Celeste, Corey is on the line right now.
Oh, well, thank you, Sonia, and good morning, Corey. How are you doing?
Good morning, Celeste. This is Corey from Portland, Texas. Now I'm in Canada, so it's good to hear from you again. First of all, I just wanted to say I'm sorry for your loss. I've lost people, too, especially back in Houston with everything going on. You have the deep freeze plus COVID. It hasn't been pretty, so I totally understand. And then also to your point about, representation, what I've noticed a lot, and from more of the progressive side, is there seems to be like this over-humanization as well, to where not only have I humanized you and I see you, I've super-humanized you. There's a study that came out a couple of years ago where they said that white people see black people as superhuman, as if a plane exploded, who would survive? I'm thinking no one, but they said that more of a chance at a black person. I'm like, and I think that's also very detrimental. I remember when I lived in Southeast Portland, a neighbor wanted me to move a safe from their basement. And I'm like, first of all, that safe was from the 1920s. Second of all, no. But the fact that they just figured, yeah, he can do it. He can move a I can't. So, but it's that sort of over humanization. That's also detrimental, I think, as well. But when it comes to Uncle Ben and Aunt Mama and these images, I see what you're saying. I think that sometimes these images, they're just detrimental, but they're so interwoven. Like you mentioned, the indigenous population. I grew up in Texas, where our mascot was the Rangers, and the opposing team was the Comanches. And so you grew up thinking, oh, let's go fight the Comanches. I'm like, wait a minute. Now that you processed this, some 20-year-old, that was wrong. And yet the pushback is that we still need these mascots because this is part of our heritage. Well, whose heritage are you talking about? Because I've heard that from my white friends. Like, yeah, Corey, that's part of our heritage. Like, no, you have no Comanche blood. That's not part of it. You're Czechoslovakian. Anyway, I find it odd how people just really want to hold on to these images. Yeah, even the Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, there was, I was on Reddit. I'm like, you know, it's not a bad image. I'm like, that's, who's saying that? Like, I don't want to see that. I don't need to see that to eat some rice.
Yes. Yes. You know, well, first let me say something to that whole superhuman image. There's so many ways in which that's dangerous to us, and it's dangerous to any group that gets exoticized like that. One of the fallouts from that is that we are thought of as not being sensitive to pain, and if you were to go to an emergency room or go to your health care provider and they weren't particularly enlightened, they might think you were drug seeking, you know, and you're a regular human being who, like any human being, may have a low threshold for pain or a high threshold. You know, there's a spectrum of humanity in there. And so they go in, you go in and say, you know, doctor, I'm hurting. Oh, no, you can't be hurting. You can't be in pain. Look how dark your skin is. You all don't feel pain. What? What?
Exactly.
You know, but that's the reality.
Exactly. And it crosses socioeconomic bounds, because when Serena Williams had her daughter, that was the same thing she went through. You're Serena Williams. You don't need pain medication. Like, she almost died. And so, and even my sister who works in healthcare tells me the same thing. They still teach that stuff in the textbooks to this day at universities in Texas and Louisiana, that, like you just said, blacks don't need as much pain medication because they're quote unquote superhuman. And it's something that is prevalent in society still to this day. That's why they can shoot us, and you know, they'll shake it off. Like, no, a bullet's a bullet. But no, thank you. I'm glad you're still doing your thing. I'm still listening from a different country, but I really appreciate it.
Well, you know, make sure you let them know up there in Canada that KBU exists so they can check it out down here. You know, we try to have some enlightened conversations. We don't let Canada have all the common sense.
I know. I'll let them know. I'll tell them today.
All righty. Well, thanks for the call and the conversation, Corey. I appreciate that.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area. What does that even mean, Celeste? Well, that means, you know, if you're in Gresham, or if you are in Tigard or Beaverton, you know what I mean. The outlying areas that are individual, you know, municipalities, but are connected, you know. But however, if you're in Philomath, or if you're in Clascanai, or if you're in Hood River, it might be a different setting. So Philomath is 104.3, and Hood River is 91.9, and Clascanai is probably KBOO.FM. Yeah. And so I've been trying to strike up the conversation here, and thanks to Corey, we're talking about just black images in American consciousness. And you know, I know in other countries they have similar ideas, because the whole idea of racism and racial inferiority has been imported and exported, you know, like a commodity. And so other countries have their ideas about who we are too. But most notably, I'm talking about American, United States of American, by the way, ideas of black people and images. And will we disappear if we become politically conscious because people don't want to deal with the controversy, or will we become more sophisticated and more human and humane in the way we portray black people in just all walks of life in America? And as Corey had alluded, the exotification and mystification and ascribing superpowers or super levels of tolerance to folks of color is no more helpful than denigrating. And we really want to see people as people, and recognizing that there is beauty in this diversity, and not danger in this diversity.
Got a couple more.
So, okay, well, let's go to it then. Good
Brian,
morning.
You're live.
Hey, hi, how are you? Once again, interesting conversations. Just a couple things I just bring to throw into the stew here. Just the thought about some of these racial stereotypes, you know, in advertising and in media and all that. I was in a traveling musician back in the late 80s in Japan a number of times, and I remember shopping for some essentials in the store, and they had, and this I was just blown away, and this was in the late 80s. They had a toothpaste, and this was just among a number of products like this, a toothpaste called Darkly. It was either Darkly or Darkly, and it had a black face with a big smile on the cover, and I was just blown away, and I was like, that's an American, I mean, I'm asking you, I think that's pretty much an American thing, right? And this was all the way in Japan, in a very homogenous society, yet they had this stereotype, which is, you know, I would say possibly beyond Aunt Jemima. I mean, it's like, wow, I couldn't believe in Japan. And it's like, that just shows how pervasive, I guess, is because of old Hollywood stereotypes, or why, I don't even know why it would be there. I was just amazed. I was just like shaking my head. Wow, how does this happen in Japan? And then the other thing I wanted to say was about COVID. One thing I've noticed, I've always been a person kind of had this basic concept of like, it's, you know, it's best to promote the good of the whole rather than the individual, you know, the whole society rather than individual, and individuals health is very important, but we got to think along the lines of, you know, the group, you know, group health, for example. And sometimes our media's fixation on a person, or, you know, a person down a mine shaft, or a person, or a small group of people, and sometimes our media would fixate on that, and oh my God, these people might die, and it's horrible, yes, but, and then at the same time seem to ignore some of these things that are threatening the whole society or the whole world. But now with COVID, I don't know if I'm alone, but I've sensed a basic, like, to the point where it's kind of flip-flop. Now I'm like going, whoa, what's going on? It's like the individual deaths, like elderly people and people of color and all these people that are actually dying, individuals dying from this. It's like, oh, too bad, another death. Okay, moving on. Has anybody else noticed that it's kind of like an almost flip-flopping the other direction, where individual life and death is like, meh, another one's gone. Okay, moving on. We're almost 500,000. Okay, big number. I don't know. It's just a sense of, wow, it's been, like, diminished. You know, does that ring true to you?
I can understand how that has happened in some other places, like when we have talked about death tolls in minor catastrophes, you know, like floods and what have you, and I designated minor as compared to like the 9/11 event, you know. Right. But I haven't seen a kind of aggregation of it as just people dead yet. It still seems to touch people quite personally, and I haven't experienced that kind of lumping everybody together as just one amorphous, you know, bunch of people.
What I was saying, I just seemed to notice, even when people are reporting someone dead, a friend or family, it just seems like there isn't the grief level that there used to be. It's almost like people have become numb. Like, yeah, there's a lot of
death.
That's what I'm saying. Numbness.
Yeah, because I'm not able to cry for this person who I love deeply because I'm exhausted. I felt bad at first, and then I realized, no, I'm exhausted.
You know? Okay, maybe it's just an exhaustion.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a such thing, and having worked as a nurse, and then I remember when I went down as part of a think tank to New Orleans the first time behind Katrina, I went through compassion exhaustion. I I'm kind of a empathetic and empathic person when it comes to a lot of situations. And I was just blown away by the emotional burden that people were going through, even professionals who were skilled and trained at how to deal with this and helping other people transcend, you know, trauma, were traumatized because, well, they were human. And, you know, and I think for a lot of people, if you're seeing this, it has to be fatigue, you know. And so I think you bring up a really important point, is that people shouldn't be hard on themselves if they can't mourn like they feel they should. And
right.
They let other people make them feel bad if they can't mourn, because there's only so much we can handle. I mean, that's what exhaustion is.
Yeah. Okay. That does help explain it. That's just, it seemed like I had seen a change, especially in the media when talking about death. I mean, there'll be, you know, they'll honor someone, but there's just would seem to be a lacking of that deep sorrow that I used to hear in people's voices, and I guess the fatigue is it.
Yeah. But yeah. With regard to the toothpaste, to do a pivot, and I'm not being insensitive, folks.
No.
But the toothpaste you mentioned, I read an article about it some months ago about how it was a big item in China. And
this actual product you're talking about?
Yes, it was marketed Darlie, but it was first called Darkie toothpaste, and it was an old toothpaste, and I don't remember the company that had it. I know one of the names was Hawley or something, or Hawkey or Harley, and it was a toothpaste. And
yeah.
It was actually called Darkie, just like you said, and they sold it in China.
And then Hong Kong and
Taiwan, yeah.
I mean, that stereotype isn't going to come from anywhere but America, right? Wasn't that specifically a thing that started here, that whole
dehumanization of, I won't say it just happened here in America, but let's just say when it was refined, it most definitely continuously exported from America, because the French and you know, the Belgians and the, yeah, the English, they had their various versions of it too.
Okay, so
you know?
So we don't get to own that wonderful thing, huh?
Well, we own it in that we're the purveyors and the refiners of racism, in it's such a way that it bears a unique piece of DNA strand from America, because American racism is a commodity. It's a commodity, you know?
Yeah. It'd be interesting to just have somebody be able to interview the producers of that product and find out where their minds were, if they were actually promoting racism or if they just somehow found this marketing niche that they thought was... I mean, it's just like, imagine the kind of corrupted mindset that would produce a product like that. But anyway, thank you for the conversation.
Well, thank you for the conversation as well. Take care, Horace. I mean, Brian. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. This is Celeste flying solo. Join in the conversation, especially if you're trying to figure out how to punch through that protective coating of exhaustion, and you just want to acknowledge the fact that human beings are suffering loss right now with us approaching this level of death from COVID. You know, I just want to offer condolences to anyone who's going through it. And then, you know, secondarily, if you've lost anybody to the freeze, even, because I know in Texas they are struggling. One woman lost all three of her children in her home, and you can't imagine how exhausting that must be to a human being, especially as an overlay to the pandemic. But we are here together, and we lift each other up as we can, because, you know, like plants seeking sunlight, we have to be oriented toward life. We have to face it. The phone number for conversation and some mutual uplifting is 503-231-8187. And you said I had somebody else in the queue there, Sonia?
Yes, I believe we have Robbie on the line. Go ahead, Robbie, you're live.
Good morning.
Good morning. And I just want to say I feel very, you know, I my heart feels for you. I'll be praying for you and your family and the loved ones in your life. You know, sending the good thoughts and the thinking in your way. One thing that I wanted to bring attention to is like I love this conversation. And actually, I was thinking about how I think it was back in 2008, maybe around 2010, there came out on the news stories that there was the underrepresentation of African Americans in Hollywood, right? They were noticing, I don't know if it was like the Screen Actors Guild or the Film Actors Guild, but there were it came to light and that, you know, there was huge discrepancies with how Hollywood was portraying, you know, black African Americans and all sorts, you know, just that whole, it came to light, right, that there was this underrepresentation. And what happened out of that was it made me, I don't think they answered it, because what I noticed what they started doing is they started putting, you know, all sorts of different, they started putting Latino, Latinx, you know, like they started putting Asian and blacks, they started putting them more into commercials. But what I noticed was that, what was that?
I said, yes, I heard that. Yes, go ahead.
And so, but when that happened, what I was noticing was that these were the commercials for credit card companies. These were the commercials for, you know, auto loans, you know, like everything to do with all this predatory capitalist system. It wasn't, you know, home security systems. This wasn't, you know, Old Navy. I mean, well, maybe they did. They started doing it. But what I started seeing is that they then started including, you know, more diverse character castings, but for all I had the problem with it because I worked for a mortgage industry, and so to see how they're like, oh, okay we're going to start, you know, advertising to, you know, black Americans, and it's going to be strictly credit card companies and, you know, Rocket, you know, more, you know, not Rocket, but, you know, robo signing loans, like all these. And so what I was concerned about was the lack of, because like at the time people were like, well, aren't you just happy that they're casting more diverse, you know, people? And if I could equate this to one thing that, you know, this is another, you know, very interesting system. When you watch the powers that be and how they play the system, you know, think of in the 60s and the 70s when women started, you know, taking to the workforce, which was, you know, a great thing. You know, it was empowering women. They were no longer needing to, you know, depend on, you know, men so much, is the idea that was behind it. But everybody, I mean, not everybody, people were noticing it, but the reason it was accepted was because that you could no longer support a family on one income and they needed to work. And so it was like this, you know, like, it's like that drawback. It's like, well, wait, you know, like we're all like, this should have happened a long time ago, but now, you know, we're not, now nobody saw how you need two incomes to take care of a family. And so I feel like it's kind of the same way with this representation of diversity in our public, and it needs to be, you know, we need to be cognizant of it. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up, like, you know, now, you know, that, you know, where are they going to be? How is it going to be represented? Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up, but I appreciate the topic.
Well, I appreciate you bringing this up and you seeing it, because those are the kind of things we people look at all the time. You know, I was laughing because even if they have us in some commercials, and even if it's not as a consumer, and, you know, and a mindless consumer, you know, or to that end, is not always the most flattering situations. They find a way to kind of like make you less than who you are. And one of the kind of commercials that bug me like that is the one where they have an older black man who is little stocky, and he's eating his Cheerios, and they're not, the way the script was written made me feel as though they still were finding ways to make him less than masculine, less than healthy, less than he's less than, I guess, what they would call respectable. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, am I being too sensitive, or am I seeing this as it really is? Or then there's another one where, like you said, maybe they've got somebody looking at a credit card and they're singing and dancing because now they have credit. But you know that credit card is not known for being one of the better credit cards, so it's like they're marketing a lower level or a lower tier product at folks of color. And I'm thinking, well, how come they're not showing the woman or the, you know, the black woman or the Latinx man or the Asian teenager with, you know, the ultimate credit card and the top tier of credit? How come it's the low end of the spectrum? And I'm looking at this just kind of like you said, thinking, we're still nothing more than consumer fodder. You know, that's all it is.
Yep.
And it makes me sad, because even when they do have people of color, sometimes they try to find the lightest, most ambiguous ethnically speaking person they can put in there, so you can't tell who this person is. You just have to say, well, apparently it's BIPOC, and I guess that's good enough. So you know, it's all the same in some ways. It's like, you can't just be seen as a human. You got to be seen as something less than, and something that is, you know, some kind of worker drone, and not as a full-fledged, fully enabled and empowered person. You got to be some kind of worker drone or less than. And if I ever saw all of us being portrayed as not exoticized human beings with a full range of human potential, I think I would fall out. I wouldn't know how to act. It's like, I'd be suspicious. It's like, what's this commercial for?
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know, and I'm just going to end it with this topic, or this one example. But yeah, you know, it's like I would go and get an STD check at either the Oregon Health Center, or, you know, I would go around and there'd be just the images, or even on the Macs, you know, and it will be like, you know, oh, you know, get checked for STDs, or else, are you pregnant? And it's always, you know, it's always Latinx people on these billboards. But then you go and you watch TV and it's like a commercial for Viagra or whatever, you know, erectile dysfunction pill, and it's white people, you know, and like in their vacation homes. And
I felt the same way for a lot of things. It'll always be a BIPOC person for STDs, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And it bothers me. Well, thank you for the conversation.
Right in front of us.
Most importantly, thank you for the awareness, because, you know, once your eyes are open, you can't go back to being blind. And thank you for sharing that, because, you know, telling other people what you see and, you know, having conversations like this is how we start humanizing each other. So I really appreciate that. And thank you for the prayers. Mm-hmm. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. Phone number for joining in the conversation is 503-231-8187. This is Celeste. I'm flying solo today. I want to encourage anyone who is able and interested in seeing how the art movement in Chicago dealt with these images of black people, check out this event that KBOO has. We're presenting BAM, Chicago's Black Arts Movement. The film is available for viewing. It was available from February 18th, and it'll be available through February 24th. And then we have the live panel discussion on Wednesday the 24th. Yours truly will be the MC. You'll get a chance to meet Tabiti Lewis, who is the author of Ballers of the New School, Pavrida Narayaknan, who is the author of What Are You Reading? Angela Jackson is the Illinois Poet Laureate, And Euphemie Perkins is an activist who was really influential in the organization of the Black American culture. And these folks will be discussing as part of our presentation and as part of our Black History offering, the Black Arts Movement, the film BAM, and what it was like to be alive in those rarefied times. And you'll get a chance to see the movie, support KBOO, hear some stimulating conversation, and maybe even broaden your whole idea of how human beings portray themselves. Because whether you think about it this deeply or not, the way you portray people of color in the cultures and the way you resonate with them says a lot about who we are. And it says more about maybe the people who do it than it does the people who are portrayed. Because, I mean, if you stop and you think about stereotypical images that you have seen of the quote-unquote Black pickaninny eating chicken or watermelon, that says more about the person who put it out there than it does about me. Really, it says nothing about me. It says something about what you think of me. So, you know, this is one way to kind of help diminish not only artificial walls and boundaries between ourselves, but if I'm really going to be honest out of my background, I would say it would diminish a lot of stress in our lives, because once we see each other as human beings and not as predatory animals or stereotypical creatures, you know, we start realizing that we have allies in this journey called life, and not people or beings that are going to be predators and, well, making life seem a lot scarier than it has to be. Anyway.
Got a call?
Oh, well, thank you, Sonia. Good morning. To whom do I have the pleasure?
Oh, my name is John.
Well, good morning, John. What's on your mind?
Well, about 20 years ago, Spike Lee made a movie about stereotypes in commercials. And it had a comical twist, but you know, he was serious and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things they were featuring on, there was a restaurant in Portland, Oregon, and it was located on Northeast Sandy and 57th. Now it's Clyde's Prime Rib.
Yeah,
and it used to have an entrance. It was a barbecue place, and it was a big entrance of a Black guy's mouth that you walked.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was called, but they had another one. It was called Little Black Sambo's restaurant chain, and that also was around Portland and Seattle area. So it was kind of interesting. Portland got their 2 cents worth in this film. I forgot the name of the movie, but you know, you could kind of, it's a Spike Lee production.
If you want to see a movie that's similar to that but was made a whole lot earlier, you want to see this movie by a Black man named Marlon Riggs, R-I-G-G-S, and it's called Color Adjustment. I think the one you're talking, I know the Spike Lee movie you're talking about, but I can't remember the name, but I think Michael Rapaport and a few, Ossie Davis and a few other people were in it. I've seen drawings of the Clyde's restaurant. It had the caricature, the Black Sambo face. And it was...
Yeah.
And for a state that didn't want Black people up in it, you know, it's amazing how vicious the racism was up here in this state.
But anyway, that just came to my mind when I was listening to your program, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you as well, John. Mm-hmm. You know, and the point that John brought up is one of the reasons why not only I'm happy that we're having this movie, BAM, Black Arts movement. But most importantly, you know, the reason why we need to have conversations like this, because the whole idea of these caricatures of anybody who is not the right white is recognizing, you know, dealing with this is recognizing that these are dynamics that are designed to keep us divided as human beings and not to recognize that we are all one species. There is just the human race. And when I say these images of anyone who's not the right white, well, you know, the fact is that in the latter 1800s, after, well, even during slavery, really, you know, when you had the white lower class that couldn't get work because the planters and the slave owners had free labor, you know, they looked at those white people as white trash. And when you look at that and you think, oh, well, if I'm not the right white, somebody's got a name for me, they're choosing a name, a designation that's less than human for me, you realize that this is designed to divide every possible way human beings from each other. You know, nobody's safe. No one is safe. And that's all the more reason why we need to recognize how harmful these images are and work to not tear them down in general and in public, but tear them down specifically and internal, so that we keep refreshing our mind and we keep finding that programming that says, aha, you know, I'm going to put you in a place that's less than so that I can stand on you and get a little higher, a little faster, a little further away. But all of this work, this all of this social justice work doesn't have to be hard, you know. There are times when you can take a look at it and find humor in the ignorance that we have overcome and find joy in the accomplishment in the battle. You know, and I'm hoping that you remember to do that in your daily life and that you don't just get frustrated by the fact that we're all too quick as human beings sometimes to want to separate and make somebody the other by, you know, different means. It is 8:51. It's been a great conversation. We've talked to Corey and Brian and Robbie and John. But where are my girls at? Where are my women at? Where are my sisters at? You know, I know that we have opinions. We are actually 51%. Where y'all at now? Come on. 503-231-8187. I have scant minutes left, but I sure would like to end the show by having a conversation with my sisters in the morning, you know, today in the show. I'd like to hear somebody. And I want to thank Sonia for being my engineer in the meantime and remind you that you are listening to KBOO Portland. And to stay tuned because at 9 o'clock comes the Old Mo Variety Hour. Did I hear you in there, Sonia?
Yeah. Meanwhile, I had an inkling, and a caller and I did a little research and found that confirmed that the film in question is Bamboozled.
Yes, that is the one. Thank you. Thank you.
And let's see who this is on the phone.
Yes. Good morning. Did I lose something? Are you still there, Sonia?
Yes, I was answering the phone.
Okay.
It is our good friend Annalise. Go ahead, you're live.
Oh, hello, Annalise. How are you doing?
Good morning. Well, talking about...
I haven't heard from you in a while. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I listen though, but I have a comment on on the commercial part on television, where, and this has happened to my mother, these are the commercials on women that have, that are incontinent, and then, mm-hmm. I think about my mother at the end of her life. In one commercial, you see a woman in the grocery store, and she's reaching for a certain brand of diapers.
Mm-hmm.
With her shopping cart and whatever. I don't listen to it, so I don't know what they're saying. But then there is a commercial, and at first, when I saw it first, I kind of was taken aback, where you see a person of color, and I might presume it's a black woman, a person of color, and she is standing in underwear, the protective underwear.
Mm-hmm.
I find that very offensive. That they show this person half naked in that kind of a garment, where never is there any word of prevention of incontinency. What is it called?
And, mm-hmm.
and that the woman in the grocery store is a white woman. And the woman in the commercial, another commercial on television, is a black woman standing in a brief, say, in underwear, which is a protective garment. And I found that offensive, because they can show those garments without a person in it.
Annalisa, I'm going to confess, I've had the same thought, and it goes back and forth in my mind. It's like, This is how society makes you second guess yourself sometimes, because
yes.
I thought exactly the same thing you said, and I've looked at it and I thought, well, but it's not like we're not, as human beings, everybody may have an issue with incontinence, but then how come it's a black woman? and how come you can't just put everybody in there? Or why does it have to be a human being? Why must it be a face on? And most of those commercials have had black women in there. I thought, how interesting. And I have, like I said, we have to fight the conclusions that kind of marketing almost tries to force us to make. Because it's almost as if to say, yep, by the time you're in your middle ages, black women, regardless of how fit or how healthy you may be, this is how you're going to look, and this is how the condition of your body, and we're still going to use you for marketing. So you're still in a form of on the auction block. So yeah,
I would not,
you're not the only one.
Yeah, okay, well, but what I wanted to tie it in with actually is that there are no commercials on prevention of, because I learned that a long time ago after I had my first baby, where I went for my first checkup and my doctor told me to do certain exercises. So
yep.
so that my uterus would get stronger again, because that is, of course,
right.
Especially in older women, that is part of where you're. Anyway, I don't want to go into that, but there's no prevention messages on television by doctors.
No, because you can't sell prevention.
No,
thank you so much. Yeah, we're almost out of time, but I want to thank you so much for that call and that point, because I think what we want to do is from now on look not only at how these images shape our thinking, but more importantly, tell yourself that this is not you, and you can also take your future in your hands and guide it where you want to. And let's do that collectively as human beings toward a more positive state of being. Thank you for my callers. Thank you, Sonia, for engineering and opping the board for me, board opping, as we say. But, I also want to encourage everybody to check in Wednesday. You can go to our kboo.fm, look for BAM, and be a part of the conversation. Thank you for everybody who's been part of fundraising. One
Thanks
more,
for listening.
What did you say?
Oh,
yes.
Should I try to...
Thank you. Go ahead. Oh, did I lose you? Well, the end and the upshot is we're almost out of time, mere seconds. Stay tuned for the Old Mo Variety Hour. Check out KBOO Presents BAM, Chicago's Black Arts Movement, the live panel discussion will be February 24th. Go to Eventbrite or go to KBOO.FM, KBOO.FM, and find more information. Tickets are free of charge, but we do encourage some donations, and you'll get a chance to socialize and have some fun. This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. I'm Celeste Carey, signing off for More Talk Radio, and we will hear you next week. Take care.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, bluegrass lovers! Tune in Saturday, March 13th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. for a very special quarantine version of the Bluegrass Marathon from your friends at Music from the True Vine.